Join me as we visit the ultramodern city of Singapore. I'm Gary Bembridge, and this is Tips for Travelers, the Global Travel Destination podcast. Each month, a new destination is featured with recommendation, advice, and tips based on the first-hand travel experience I gain from the 2 to 3 times a month I travel all over the world. You may also want to check out the Tips for Travelers video podcast, a sister podcast which features videos I've made of hotel rooms or attractions with commentary and recommendations linked to the destination featured each month in this audio podcast. To find out more, visit tipsfortravelers.com, where Travelers is spelt with 2 L's, the UK way, or email me at gary@mytravelreviews.co.uk. You can subscribe to one or both of the podcasts by searching for Tips for Travelers or Gary Bembridge on iTunes or your favourite podcast directory. I really like Singapore. I've been lucky enough to visit this city and country rolled into one about 5 or 6 times over the last 10 years. And each time I go, I definitely like it more and more and more. Although some people who live in Singapore have described it as a little bit sterile, this, as a visitor, has never been my experience. The city-state has been actively working and investing over the last decade to increase the appeal, the attraction, and the facilities for tourists, and this may well be why I, as a tourist, have found I like it more and more and more. Quite simply because what the state's doing is actually working for me. They have, for example, created 2 whole new kind of tourist centres where even gambling is allowed. Singapore itself is a very modern looking city. It runs incredibly efficiently and incredibly slickly. The city is almost unbelievably smart, unbelievably pruned, unbelievably tidy, and apparently has virtually no crime. It's viewed as being just amazingly safe. It also has, though, the highest execution rate per 100,000 people in the world, around 15, which is dramatically higher than the second country in the world, which is Saudi Arabia. And I assume that part of the reason for the very low crime rate is there is a very strict and very conservative approach to many aspects of life and their laws and their enforcement of which are very harsh. Now, while some outsiders joke about some aspects, like, you know, for example, you weren't allowed chewing gum at all was allowed in the city because they decided to create a mess, where others actually criticize what they would consider to be quite draconian and quite authoritarian approach of the governing authority. Now, while officially a democracy, a lot of sort of political observers sometimes argue that Singapore is more like a mixture of democracy and kind of an authoritarian system, as there's pretty much kind of a one-party system, and the kind of executive of that system has a lot of power. It does, though, seem to work for the Singapore people, who seem pretty content, those people you speak to, with the way things work in Singapore. And it could be because the system that's run Singapore have turned it into a quite remarkable place. I mean, it's small, and yet its succession of leaders since it became self-governing in about 1969 or so has turned it into a country of very high employment, very high average GDP per citizen. It has one of the highest literacy rates at about 95%. So it has one of the highest literacy rates in the world. It's very efficient. It has very modern systems, for example, like transport. You know, it's actually one of the biggest ports in Asia. It's way ahead. And it's become a major transport kind of hub or center. The Chang'an, Changi airport, acts as one of the main Asian hubs. And the port it's created for trade, you know, is incredibly busy. You know, actually, if you look out at the amount of ships waiting to come to the port, it's absolutely and utterly remarkable. And another related fact is that, you know, it actually has one of the least corrupt, and it's actually very highly rated as kind of a government authority. It gets incredibly good ratings by the UN, etc. Singapore is also one of the most densely populated areas of the world. It has about 4.5 million people. It's quite expensive, Singapore, to live. It's about the 14th most expensive city in the world to live in. And apparently it's, although it depends who you talk to, but some people say it's the second most densely populated kind of stretch of land because it's quite a small space. Singapore is very racially diverse. It's got a big mixture of cultures. You know, you even have a thriving little China, a thriving little India area. They're very popular tourist area now, but are probably more of a reflection of its past history. Now, everywhere in Singapore, it seems to be connected to the name Raffles. Now, many people outside Singapore will have heard of the world-renowned Raffles Hotel, but few understand exactly what Raffles is or who he was. Now, Sir Thomas Stamford Raffles was a British man. He landed on the main island, because Singapore is actually a number of islands, in 1819, and he signed a treaty for the British East India Company and to establish Singapore as a trading port. Now, the location of Singapore, which is at the end of the Malay Peninsula, it was very central to the region. If you ever look at a map, you'll see Singapore is incredibly central. And basically from there, things really just grew. Now, because there were very few locals on all the islands that made up Singapore, basically Singapore attracted Chinese, it attracted Indians, it attracted Malays to come and basically work and get involved in Singapore because it was growing so fast and there was so much work. Now, Raffles, Sir Thomas Raffles, in a typical British separatist mindset of the time, what he decided to do was to try and keep the cultures and races separate. And so he established their own separate areas. It sounds very kind of British colonial stuff, doesn't it? But Raffles generally, though, is still seen as very much as the grandfather of Singapore. He's very much seen as taking this group of islands and getting it to become one cohesive, strong state, which eventually became the power that it is. Now, Singapore was occupied by the Japanese during the Second World War, and this seems to be a very brutal time, and it seems to be a very uncomfortable time when you read about it or try and talk to people about it. And there's actually still tunnels in Fort Canning, C-A-N-N-I-N-G, Fort Canning Park, and there was a whole underground command center of the British Malay Command in this park, and locals also hid out there. And after the World War, the British ran it with kind of a self-governing thing until 1959. And then for a couple of years, actually, Singapore formed into one state with Malaysia, but it was a complete disaster because they have very different philosophies and very different approaches. So they eventually separated. Singapore, I always think of and always thought of Singapore as one landmass, but it's actually, I discovered, made up of 63 islands, but there's one big main island. And as I already mentioned, it's about 4.5 million people. But because there's a limit there for how much land, space, basically what Singapore has done is it's gone upwards. So you'll see there are lots of pretty tall buildings and actually very nice architecture. Although saying that, you know, Singapore has actually grown in size through land reclamation. And it grew by 100 square kilometers in the 1960s. And it plans to add about another 100 square kilometers by 2030. And they get the soil from the seabed, from the neighbors, from Singapore itself, kind of slightly more mountainous areas. There's four official languages, although it's very clear that everybody speaks English and speaks it incredibly well. So the official languages are English, Malay, Mandarin Chinese, and Tamil. And Singapore is very much rated as the most business-friendly country pretty much in the world. And it's the location of many, many multinational head offices for the Asia area. It has very good tax. I guess because people speak English, it makes it very easy for expats to settle in. And, you know, there are a lot of expats in Singapore. Now, as with all rapid expansion, there was a time when a lot of the old kind of colonial and all those kind of buildings were being knocked down. But that's kind of changed, which is good to see. So although there's lots of very tall buildings being built and areas being developed, a lot of this is kind of on new land. And they've tried to kind of make sure that more of the colonial and the you know, interesting historical architecture is really kind of kept. Singapore has military service. It's got a quite large military reservist group. And the one thing that really struck me, I was there in August, and they have their annual National Day, which, you know, to celebrate, and they have a lot of military parades, and you just, it's unbelievable how many young military across all the services took part in that. It was just unbelievable, the pure, just huge amounts of military that there were. So, based on all that, what are my top tips for visiting Singapore? Well, the first tip that I've got is around the best time to visit. Now, pretty much any time of the year is actually fine to visit Singapore because it doesn't really have seasons. It's pretty much the temperature's between 24 degrees and 30 degrees Celsius all year round. Now, experts apparently call its climate tropical rainforest, and because it's very close to the equator, as I mentioned, there's almost no fluctuation in temperatures, and the length of the day is pretty much the same right across the year. There's almost no fluctuation, but it can be very humid and can be very sticky because of its kind of tropicalness. And June and July are the warmest months of the year, and November, December is the monsoon time, so you get lots and lots of rain, so it's probably best to avoid it. There's also a very strange phenomenon in kind of August to October in large parts of Asia, including Singapore, where they have this kind of like seasonal haze, which is actually due to bushfires in the region, which kind of gets blown across. But basically pretty much all the time of the year, but it can be very humid indeed, actually, in Singapore. Now, the second tip is around getting there and getting around. Now, getting there is very easy because, as I mentioned before, Singapore is such a big hub, and it's a big stop on the route to and from Australia. So something like 80 plus airlines and growing pass through the one airport, the Chiang Mai airport. Now the airport's very easy to get to. It's about 25, 35 minutes from the center of Singapore. And once you're in Singapore, it's pretty small actually. And I believe you can kind of walk around the main sort of tourist area. But taxis are incredibly, incredibly cheap. I mean, unbelievably cheap. And the only thing with them is maybe because they're cheap, but it can sometimes take a while to get a cab, especially when it's raining. So you need to plan ahead a bit. So sometimes you'll find yourself in a queue at hotels and things like that to just get a cab. So in the busy kind of touristy areas, it can be, or areas where the hotels and things are, you can sometimes wait a while to get taxis, although they are very cheap. Now, there's also a metro system That's pretty simple to use. It runs from about 5:30 in the morning until about 12:30, and you know, it's again, the metro system is pretty extensive and it's pretty easy to use and it's very modern. Sort of as an aside, what's interesting is tipping is generally not encouraged in Singapore. It's not really seems to be the dumb thing. You know, you read in the guidebooks, they actually suggest you shouldn't tip at all. Now, with taxi drivers, you know, I have to say, taxi drivers never seem to be offended or annoyed or put out when I overpaid, basically. So, but there is a thing around tipping is not that, you know, that kind of normal. My third tip is quite a short tip, but, and this is what I only discovered on my last trip, is one of the things you must absolutely definitely do is when you're at the airport, at Chiang Mai Airport, which you'll probably have come in by, because you probably would have flown in, most of you would have flown in, is at the airport, pick up the brochures. In the airport, sort of around the baggage check areas, they have these very beautiful, well laid out stands, which have the most amazing, helpful brochures in. They have brochures covering, you know, Chinatown, Little India. There'll be one on shopping. There'll be one on walks down the river. There'll be one on tours. There'll be maps. Just incredibly, incredibly organized, and just the most amazing brochures, which give you some of the history. They give you walking tours you can go on. They tell you how long they take. They give you photographs. Just quite remarkable brochures, and they really, really are well worth doing. That's a big, big tip, is pick up the brochures. My fourth tip is a tip I almost always have, is the Round the City bus tour. As you know, a regular tip of mine is take these Round the City tours. Now, the Round the Singapore bus trip options are very good, and the cheapest, especially if you've flown in on Singapore Airlines, is the distinctive yellow, and they're called SIA Hop On City Service, SIA. And as you discover, SIA really stands for Singapore. So SIA hop on City Service, and SIA is the airport code for Singapore. And if you show your recent, if you've flown on Singapore Airlines, if you show your boarding card, it only costs about $3 Singapore a day, which is nothing, which is about a quarter of the usual cost. So it's only about $12 Singapore. So it's not very much. I can't remember the conversion, but it's something like about £3 or £4. And if you've got your boarding card, it's about £1. So what's that, about $2? So it's nothing. Now, there's no commentary on this bus, the SIA hop-on, but the City Service. But you get a very good map, very comprehensive map. It has all the stops. It tells you what to see at each of the stops. And the driver plays a short tape at each stop, which tells you the name of the stop and what attractions are there. But the map's very good, and you can get on and off as much as you can within a 24-hour period. So it's an incredibly good value. You can even use it almost to commute around. Now, there are also, as part of the SIA services, the green buses, which are called SIA Hop-On Sentosa, S-E-N-T-O-S-A, shuttle service. Now, this visits a little bit of the city and then goes to the tourist island of Sentosa, which has things like golf courses, underwater world, beaches, and other kind of attractions. Now, the main yellow tour takes a couple of hours. It's very good for getting a sense of the island. You get to see, you know, basically where all the main sites are. You get to the part of Singapore, which you probably won't necessarily do. The problem with this tour is you need to have read a history to really appreciate what you're seeing. The map's pretty good, but I always feel that when you're doing it yourself, you kind of miss it a little bit. So there is a more commercial option, which is called the Topless Hippo. Now, you'll probably remember that, the Topless Hippo. And this is a double-decker bus where the top part of one of them seems to be kind of open. The second half is kind of open, the top half is open. And so the Topless Hippo, this has commentary. And a good place to pick it up is the marina area. But the stops basically for the Topless Hippo seem to be near most of the SIA hop-on. So you'll find it's either sort of one stop before. If you get off, you know, if you just look for either, you know, either the Topless Hippo or the SIA, you'll find pretty much a bus near. And the bus stop near, should I say. And all the hotel concierges have the details of those. And that's pretty good, actually, because it gives you commentary, gives you background, and gives you a good sense of things. Now, there are also a lot of sightseeing tours and tour companies, which seem quite reasonably priced. And I was quite amazed, actually, at just how many sightseeing tour companies there were and how much there is to do in Singapore. It's actually amazing, the list and the breadth of tours. The leaflets that you pick up at the airport, I thought were actually gave the best options, but you can often find at, you know, obviously all the concierge will have, but the one at the airport, which are produced by kind of a government agency, seem to actually provide, I thought, the best options. But that, you know, but there are a lot of tours, a lot of sightseeing tours, a lot of escort tours, you know, day tours, night tours, short tours, long tours, and you know, it's very impressive. They also, the tourist authority has a Singapore Tours and Attractions Pass, which includes things like a duck tour, which goes on and off the river, lots of river cruises and things, which is okay. It's relatively reasonably priced, but it's more kind of transportation bits and pieces. But if that's the sort of thing that gets you, then you'll enjoy that. Now, my fifth tip is the thing that pretty much everyone in Singapore always asks if you've done, and whether people have visited Singapore, whether they're locals, they always seem to ask you if you've done it. So my advice is give it a go. It sounds very exotic. And what it is it's called the night safari. Basically what it is a night visit to the zoo, which can also include a dinner and a show option. Now the zoo is pretty large. It's over 40 hectares. It's got a very large amount of nocturnal animals, about a thousand. Nocturnal animals, which is why they kind of, I guess, got the idea of the night safari, because there's so many kind of nocturnal animals. And what you do is you tour the zoo in like tram cars, and it's pretty good fun, and it makes a difference from just, you know, going to the zoo and whatnot. Now, if you buy a package, you can get an animal show, you get some travel dancing, dinner, and all that kind of stuff. And it's open from 6 o'clock at night to midnight, and tram rides run from about 7:30 p.m. And you can find more at nightsafari.com.sg. That's nightsafari.com.sg. But it's something that you've got to do. It's kind of one of those institutions, a bit like going to Raffles and having a Singapore sling, which I'll talk about a bit later. Now, as I mentioned, there's a lot of things to do in Singapore. So my sixth tip, though, is to do Chinatown walking guide. Now, if you followed one of the earlier tips, you'll have picked up your Uniquely Singapore booklet about walking through Chinatown. But what's interesting about Chinatown, it's called Chinatown, but a lot of it isn't Chinese. So you'll have Hindu temples, you'll have Islamic mosques. It's sort of a little bit blurred. It wasn't quite as clear as it sounds, and I guess as Raffles had originally intended. Chinatown's actually quite a big area, so the walking tour is really designed in the booklet and the one that I followed to just get, a feeling for Chinatown. You could spend a lot of time around there. And the other thing to remember is because some of the temples that if you may want to go into, you've got to be relatively modestly dressed. So, women have got to wear long skirts or trousers. So you also need to think about, it is very hot in Singapore. So if you want to go out doing kind of walking stuff and going into the temples, you need to think about how you dress, because you won't be able to go to the temples otherwise. Now, the great thing about Singapore is they call a spade a spade. So if you want to go to Chinatown, all you do is you go to the Chinatown MRT station, the metro station. It's called Chinatown, and so that's where you're going, and that's where you go. And it's actually Pagoda Street, which is the name of the street that it's actually on. And some of the highlights for me was a place called the Majestic, and this is a it's a conserved building. It's kind of a shopping mall. It was built by kind of a rich Chinese tycoon in at sort of about early 1900s, and he built the Majestic because another opera house had basically refused to let his wife in. And so basically what he did is he built his own basically for his wife. And so you'd get opera stars from China would come, and and China opera was very exquisite costumes and all this kind of stuff. And so that's a beautiful building. It really is quite a beautiful building. See, and Pagoda Street is really where the heart of Chinatown was, which is what you'll be on. And they had opium dens and they had slave trade. It was all a little bit seedy, it sounds. And it's kind of where people were going to hang out, I guess, and they'd spend all their money gambling and taking, smoking, drugs and whatnot. And so it's a very interesting kind of thing. Obviously, you don't get that any nowadays. But also, what you'll do is at the end of the street, you get a temple at the end of the street, which is, and I'm going to apologize if I pronounce it correctly, is Sri Mariamman Temple, Sri Mariamman Temple. And it's actually right at the end. It has this amazing sculptured tower, which you get to see. You'll also go through, and there's lots of street markets where you'll get all sorts of bits and pieces. And the other thing on Pagoda Street, which is very interesting, is the Heritage Centre. The Heritage Centre will take a while to go through, but it's almost like going into, the book describes it as a time capsule, and they have recreated room setups, and they have videos, and they have sculptures, and it's really, 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 really interesting. I already mentioned that the temple, it was built, the Mariamman Temple, it was built in 1827, and it's just the most amazing, amazing looking building. I can't really just describe it. It has all this very strange roof. Nearby, you have Smith Street, which is where you have kind of, it's also known as kind of the Chinatown food street. So lots and lots and lots of food. And just basically wandering around and looking at stuff. Now, in the actual booklet, you'll find just piles and piles of shops and all sorts of things to visit. They have about 13 kind of main things to look at. And it's just really fantastic visiting Chinatown. So that's my sixth tip, and you'll spend a good day at least doing that. My seventh tip is to do the Little India walking guide. And again, the booklet is very detailed. And again, as you've seen here, there's kind of like a bit of a blur between Chinatown and Indian and the Indian area. But there's a couple of interesting areas, and they tend to be slightly more focused around the temple. So and I apologize again for the name. There's the Sri Veeramakilimalakaman Temple. That's Sri Veeramakilimamman Temple. There's the Leong San Buddhist Temple, the Adolf Gafur Mosque, and there's flower garland shops, which are quite amazing, and just incredible food, particularly if you like if you like Indian, if you like Indian food. Again, very simple to find it. You go to Little India MRT. So again, Singapore calls a spade a spade. You just go to Little India MRT. It's actually at the Bukit Timah Road, Bukit Timah Road, and you have kind of there's a market when you come out. And you go down Buffalo Road, which the reason it's called Buffalo Road is because it used to be full of buffalo pens, and it would be full of snake charmers and fortune tellers and astrologers and palmists and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, that's kind of Buffalo Road is now very interesting, and it's got shops and things on. You've got Racecourse Road, not surprisingly, because it's where it had the racecourse. And so what's interesting about Singapore is they just call things what they were. And just very interesting, there's lots of interesting shops, and if you find it, just down there is Little India Arcade, and they have the most beautiful hand-embroidered clothes, sari fabrics, that kind of stuff. And what a lot of people do when they travel and visit Little India is they have kind of henna tattoos, which is, it's kind of like a dye that they use, and you know, they kind of, it's a temporary tattoo, but it's kind of hand painted on, and a lot of people like to do that. And there's a lot of those around. And the other thing a lot of people like to buy is the flower garlands. A lot of flower garlands, and they're kind of garlands of jasmine and marigold and roses, and they symbolize purity, peace, and love, etc. And they're just amazing. And what they normally do is people will place them on statues of gods, etc., as prayer offerings. But they're just absolutely beautiful. There's also the most amazing, amazing mosque, which is called Masjid Abdul Ghafur, M-A-S-J-I-D, Masjid Abdul, A-B-D-U-L, Ghafur, G-A-F-O-O-R. And the entrance of the mosque is a sundial, and it's got these like 25 rays, and they've got all this calligraphy, and apparently it's the 25 prophets, and it's just the most incredibly beautiful building. The other thing which is very funny, if you kind of go a little bit further down, you may come across an Indian fortune teller and a parrot, and the parrot's the one that tells you your fortune. And eventually what you do, if you keep following the road, you get to that amazing temple that I spoke about in Chinatown, the Sri Veeramakkalamallan Temple. And just the roof of it, you could just spend ages looking at, which is just all these kind of characters carved out. So that's the Little India tour. Well worth doing. Now, shopping is a huge thing in Singapore. Shopping is big, and in fact, probably one of the biggest kind of guidebooks you'll get is, and booklets you'll get is the Singapore Shopping Guide. Shopping's a really big thing. It's known for duty-free goods. It's known for technology, it's known for fashion, gadgets at very good prices, all that kind of stuff. And there's a couple of key areas. Orchard Road is the big road for the most amazing shops, and Marina Bay, which is a relatively new development. But basically, Orchard Road and Marina Bay are the two big shopping areas, and they'll be very easy to find. Everyone kind of knows where they are. The other thing which I found amazing is near the Marina Bay area, you can pretty much travel what's feels like ages and ages of Singapore in this underground world, which is basically shopping malls and arcades, but they're all under the roads, they're under the parks, and you can go for ages and ages underground, which is basically an underground mall underneath all the roads and everything. Very interesting. And the other thing that's very big is almost every single month of the year, there's kind of some big shopping event. So in March and April, you get the Fashion Festival. May to July, you get what's called the Great Singapore Sale, which is when kind of the whole city goes on sale, and even have a website which is called greatsingaporesale.com.sg. There's a jewel fest normally in October, then there's a big Christmas thing which runs from November to January. So they also kind of almost theme a lot of their tourist events around shopping, which is pretty remarkable. Shops open from about 10 o'clock in the morning till late at night, you know, 9, 10, and you can get a lot of tax-free stuff back. So Orchard Road, Marina Bay are the big ones, and obviously you've got your Chinatown and Little India. So shopping's a big thing. You've got to make sure that you put time aside for shopping. So that was my ninth tip, was really shopping. My next tip is the river walk and boat trip. There are a lot of river walking down the river, there are lots of boat trips, and I'm not going to recommend anyone in particular because there's so many of them, but basically Clark Quay Boat Quay and Robinson Quay are really where, you know, a lot of the boats go. But you'll see them up and down the river, very popular, very easy to find, lots of different options. My last and final tip is Raffles. You've got to go to the Raffles Hotel. As I mentioned, it's named after Sir Thomas Raffles. It's a beautiful old colonial hotel. It's a big tourist spot. They have the doormen's dressed up in very colonial dress. They have the most amazing shops with all sorts of souvenirs around Singapore and Raffles-specific souvenirs. And you've got to go to the Raffles Bar and have a Singapore Sling, which was, of course, invented by one of the barmen at Raffles. The bar where they serve it is upstairs, and it has these old-fashioned fans, which are basically big sort of almost like palm things swaying. And you're given all these peanuts, which you basically, you know, pod, if that's the right word, and all the husks are thrown on the floor, and it really is fantastic. The Singapore Slings are really, really, really good. And so those really are my tips for visiting Singapore. Very tourist orientated, lots and lots of things to do. Very good website to visit is visitsingapore.com. That's visitsingapore.com from the Singapore Tourist Board. Really very well supported and quite amazing. If you enjoy Tips for Travellers, I'd like to invite you to sign up to the Tips for Travellers blog. All you do is you either visit tipsfortravellers.com, remember where travellers is spelled with two L's, or mytravelreviews.blogspot.com. That's mytravelreviews.blogspot.com. And on there you'll find blog postings that are constantly updated with videos, photographs, reviews, etc., etc., and lots of kind of interesting stuff you'll find down the left-hand side, like videos, all sorts of articles, that kind of stuff. You'll also find there that you can either subscribe by clicking on one of the RSS feeds and add it to whatever your favorite thing is, like My Yahoo, or you just enter your email address and you'll get automatic email updates whenever the blog's updated. And I guarantee you that your email address will only be used for updates from Tips for Travelers blog. So that'd be great if you would do that, if you check out the blog, either by going to tipsfortravelers.com and clicking on the links there, or by visiting mytravelreviews.blogspot.com. If you're a Facebook user, if you search in groups for Tips for Travelers, you'll also find some links there, and it'd be great to see you there. You've been listening to Tips for Travellers, the global travel destination podcast. A new destination with first-hand based advice, recommendations and tips is added each month. If you subscribe to the podcast, thanks for your support. If you don't, you may want to consider subscribing by searching Tips for Travellers or Gary Beveridge on iTunes or your favourite podcast directory. You can then subscribe to the Tips for Travellers Global Travel Destination audio podcast or the video podcast with hotel rooms and attractions. To find out more, visit tipsfortravellers.com, where travellers is spelled the UK way with two L's, or email me at gary@mytravelreviews.co.uk.